Welcome to Courageous HR, sponsored by Cornerstone On Demand, here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now here's your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Beth Angerman, the Acting Principal Deputy Associate Administrator of the Office of Government-Wide Policy and Director of the Shared Solutions and Performance Improvement Office at the General Services Administration. Beth, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you for having me, Jason.
So this is a little bit of a different conversation than you and I typically have. As I said, we love to talk us some shared services. We will get into that maybe a little bit, I imagine. But let's just talk about more generally this idea of courageous HR, this idea of looking at human resources in a different light has really kind of, I think, taken the government in a new direction. In some ways, HR, human capital, people, if you want to call it, have always been very important. But let's just talk about how this idea of people has really risen above and beyond what maybe we in the government have looked at in the past. Just give me a sense of what you're seeing from a people perspective as it relates to all the work you're doing.
People are the government's greatest asset, right? Because they're the ones that are really moving forward all of these transformation initiatives. And without the people, without the buy-in of the people, we will not be successful at any of the things that we're trying to do. So I think one of the things that we're learning and that we're seeing really start to change in government is engagement of the stakeholders before we start to plan for, as part of the planning process for large transformational types of work, whether that's an IT transformation or modernization, whether it's a business process change, whether it's to shared services. All of it, and the biggest lesson learned that we've had from both our successes and our challenges over the years, is that we need better engagement of people earlier in the process.
And one of the things about that better engagement is the who, right? I mean, if you think about the citizens, there's 350 million citizens. If you think about federal employees, if you think about businesses, how do you kind of define that who piece as, say, who are we going to bring in?
I think it really depends on what it is you're trying to do. And I think it's an important exercise at the very early stage is really mapping who your stakeholders are. And you need to map them both from the who has the kind of the direct touch, right? Who has the closest impact to the change that you're trying to implement, all the way to the why are we doing this? And the why are we doing this should always land in a story to the taxpayer. Right. Even if you're talking about mission support, we should be making mission support functions more efficient and more effective and bringing IT to do that, right, to make the mission to the taxpayer better. And I think part of the challenge that we've had in government is being able to make that tie early, to explain what the problem is that we're trying to solve as early as possible, and helping the employees understand what that problem is and how they can be a real player in making an effective change.
When you talk about understanding the challenge, how do you do that? Because that's, in many ways, the culture change that we continually talk about. You know, it's not an IT problem, it's a culture problem. It's not a mission problem, it's a culture problem. How do we overcome that?
I think culture and leadership they have to be a partnership, because you're not going to change your culture without the strongest leaders to really help set a new vision for your organization. And you can't set a new vision for your organization without buy-in from the people, and the people are what really is driving the culture. So it all goes back to the workforce, and it all goes back to the people. But I also think it's about really understanding that we're not doing IT modernization for the sake of modernization of IT. And I think that that's getting lost in a lot of these messages, because we're saying, no, IT modernization is one of the key priorities. It's the so what that matters. Why? And tying that to the mission of the agency, tying that to the work of the people, helping them see themselves in a future where the thing that they've done for the last 30 years may actually be something new and may actually contribute to higher value work, which ultimately should affect the taxpayer. But that's a leadership problem. That's a leadership challenge to help the workforce see that. And that's where when you talk about HR and the nexus to HR, there's a role for the HR community in these agencies to help these business leaders really understand how to engage their staff, how to help their staff see opportunities for the future, how to right-size their workforce. All of those things are really key to the role of the CHECO in our agencies to help advise the business leaders on what the actual vision for the transformation is.
Now, in there, that answer, you, I think, highlight at least three of the upcoming management agenda items: IT modernization, workforce, and moving from low value to high value. I enjoyed the fact that you tagged it all back to having the business leaders engage in these conversations. Let's start there with the business leaders, and then we can move into the employees more broadly. The business people are focused many times on what's my end result. How do I go from point A to point B? But there's a bigger picture you're trying to get them to see.
Yeah, I think there's always a point C, And I think we're missing the point C, right? I think we've talked so much about, oh, I just need a new system, right? Or, oh, I just need to figure out how to make this broken process, right, fixed. And I think that's the short term. I think it's the long term that we need to spend a little bit more time on. And I think there's incremental progress along the way that we need to identify what success looks like all throughout the transformation journey. But I think it's what we miss is the long term, and what is the target end state of both the business itself, and then how does that target end state impact the target end state for the workforce?
But in some ways, there's no target end state, right? It's like cybersecurity, you're never done. So are you talking more about we want to be in this place in 12 months, we want to be in this place in 18 months, and then we'll reassess type of long term?
Yes, and I think that's actually really an important point about the role of technology. Technology, how it was and how we bought technology in the government 20 years ago is very different than how we can buy technology and use technology to help us evolve our business going forward. We got into this rut, I think, of where we would buy a system and then we were stuck with that system until we could buy the next system, right? So we really did start to think of things in terms of 10-year marks and milestones and visions, as opposed to being able to think about it more in an 18-month type of pattern and schedule where we're thinking about, you know what? We don't have to worry about the technology because we want to buy technology as a service wherever we possibly can, where we're getting those constant updates, where the things that stress us out today as government, which is, do I have access to capital to get the next upgrade? Do I have access to capital to do this next compliance exercise? Do I have access to capital to meet this new legislation, right, that's just passed? Versus an agreement and a partnership with industry where we just expect those things, right, and we actually contract for those things, so that we're not worrying so much about the system part of it, where we're getting innovation on a regular cadence, and we're focusing our workforce, again, more on really the mission of that workforce and the mission of, even if it's mission support, right, the mission of that particular function to add more value to the mission.
So we talked a little bit about the leadership side and getting the focus on long-term. Employees, too. I mean, sometimes when you have employees who have been there, as you said, for 20, 30 years, or even 10 years, they don't want their cheese moved, right? And that's part of that culture change. Is part of the role that you see, not just your office, but the leadership doing is helping people understand that this change is good for you, it's good for the organization, it's good for the citizen?
The role of our office is to help agencies come up with, to give agencies tools and templates and processes to help them think through what all of those aspects to change management are. The M3 playbook that we've rolled out, we have over 19 agencies working with my office right now on the earliest phases of the playbook, right? Everyone kind of immediately thought we were going to be jumping into actually migration. Well, to my earlier comment, the thing that we don't do well is the planning and the upfront work. And we have a lot of agencies really looking at the playbook early phases 0 and 1 of what is it that I even want? How will I approach change management? How do I define success for this thing that I'm doing, right? And really understanding what the process needs to be. And the role of my office, and one of the great things that we've done in the new Shared Solutions and Performance Improvement Office is we've created a Feds to Feds Solutions team, or a Feds Helping Feds group, which is really dedicated on bringing the lessons learned of what's worked and what hasn't worked in the past to other agencies, helping them understand where they might be able to change their course based on what another agency has experienced or based on what we've learned from our engagement with industry. Because if you remember, we had many, many companies, many, many agencies contribute to that playbook. And so that's all been advice that we can give to agencies as they're thinking through this process. That's how I see the role of our office.
Talk a little bit about that Feds Helping Feds idea. Is it online? Is it virtual? Is it a small group of people who go meet with agencies? All of the above?
All of the above, right? So we put as much of the tools that we have online. It's really nice because we've actually also brought in all of the tools that the Performance Improvement Council staff have worked on with the Performance Improvement Council. Again, a really nice nexus because we should be identifying at the very early part of these processes, what is the thing that I'm trying to fix and how will I measure that thing? And that's where the best practices from the performance team really help and add a lot of value to the playbook, because it's like we have guidance and we have tools to help agencies think through targeting those metrics and figuring out how they would even identify the problem that they're trying to solve. before they start moving through the transformation. So that team is engaged through, obviously we make everything available through our website, in addition to interaction with the agencies on a regular basis.
When you have put this together, did you guys look at this and say, hey, this was a logical next step, or was this, did this come up from a need? What was the impetus for this idea of Feds to Feds?
I'm going to say it was an organic evolution, because so many agencies were calling and saying, what do I do next? Where are we going here? What's happening next? What should I be looking at? What are my options? And this gave us the real opportunity that before they jumped into figuring, again, the system replacement step of the process, we said, hang on. Have you done all of the planning that you need to be doing? And then as through those conversations, we've really engaged and created some lasting partnerships with these agencies as we're working through the process.
My guest is Beth Angerman, Acting Principal Deputy Associate Administrator of the Office of Government-Wide Policy and Director of the Shared Solutions and Performance Improvement Office at the General Services Administration. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Courageous HR on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Successful HR leaders are courageous change agents, inspiring crusaders, and innovation drivers. To meet today's challenges of finding and keeping talent, these leaders need modern technology to help them recruit, train, and develop their workforces. Cornerstone On Demand's cloud-based learning and human capital management software provides government agencies with the tools to easily manage their employee data and processes, allowing the HR heroes in your agency to focus on developing engaged and skilled workers. More at cornerstoneondemand.com/HR superhero.
Welcome back. You're listening to Courageous HR on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Beth Angerman, the Acting Principal Deputy Associate Administrator of the Office of Government-Wide Policy and the Director of the Shared Solutions and Performance Improvement Office at GSA. You brought up this idea of planning several times. When we talk about planning, where's the people side of that planning? Because it's easy to get wrapped up on, well, I'm going to move off this system and go to the cloud. I'm going to go to a shared service provider. I'm going to combine my procurement system with my general ledger system and then tap it back into my ERP. And, you know, that's how people tend to think. But there's a people side, too.
There's a huge people side. I think what we've done more recently in the last year is we're engaging the people as part of even the market research phase, right? So when we've done reverse industry days, which, you know, we actually have the people who are really going to be users of the system sitting there and looking at the art of the possible. I think that's part of how you engage people and interest them in the next step of the work they're doing. I don't know that people who've been doing the same work for 20, 10, 20, 30 years aren't interested in change. I think that they just don't know what the change could possibly be for them. So you have to show them. You have to show them how cool this, you know, new technology is and what it can do. And you have to show them the art of the possible, not just for the organization, but for them personally. If you don't get them on board, they will do everything in their power to stop progress, right? Because they just are feeling threatened. So we saw an audience at those reverse industry days that was, I thought, really impressive and really got people excited for what I think they didn't realize was even out there.
And I think that is a very key point that I'd like to just look at a little bit deeper is people don't know, right? The fear of change, the art of the possible. And a lot of what your office is doing around shared services, around the centers of excellence, just, you know, in the broad sense of the things, is trying to create that change that people tend to put obstacles or hold back. When you have those conversations, what's the reaction that you see when someone goes, oh, I understand? When does the light bulb go on that you see?
Different phases of it kind of depends on the person. I mean, some people really see the opportunity for technology to help improve business processes, right? And so they see the opportunity for them to bring ideas and kind of proposals to their leadership that how they might leverage that technology to, again, do more of that high value work. Some others it takes a little bit longer, right? Because they're just feeling threatened by the fact that this technology can do my job, so what am I going to do? But that's where I think we're seeing more engagement from managers and more, hopefully, relationships with the Chico office again to help them, give them the tools to really figure out what that future workforce will be.
How are you guys working with the Chico Council or the Chico offices? If you guys are working with, and I'll pick a random agency like VA, we know they're going through a financial management modernization effort. Do you bring in the VA Chief Human Capital Officer or the people from their HR staff, as an example, to help think about, okay, where are we going in the 12 to 18 months? We talk about that longer term view.
I think every agency is different. So specifics on how the VA is engaging, obviously, I would suggest talking to them. But what I do know that we're doing at the government-wide level is working collaboratively with all of the councils now and trying to do more events where we're bringing council members across different councils together, because the Chico community understanding why we're doing IT modernization and the impact on them and the need for the Chicos to help, right, to make this an effective transformation. I think bringing those communities together will, I think, offer more value to the end user and the mission.
And you're able to do that now in some ways because you have another hat that you're wearing, which is, I don't know if it's a proper title, is the executive director of the councils. Are you finding that people are willing? Because I know there was an attempt to do something similar in the mid-2000s. It was attempted again maybe in the early 2010s. And so these fits and starts of bringing the councils together, and then they kind of separate, then they come back together.
Yep, it ebbs and flows, usually with the administration, to be honest. The councils are run and chaired by the OMB offices. I would say that I've seen a great interest in both the OMB offices and in the council members themselves to work more collaboratively together, especially on the things that very clearly cross over the different functional areas.
And I think in the end, that's what will make anything successful is that cross-pollination. As you said, the leadership, and as you talked about earlier as well, it's not just the IT folks or not just the HR folks, but it's everyone together. But that takes me down a path to ask a question about technology. Because as we've talked about, technology plays a role. It's not the only thing that it does. But talk a little bit about what role you're seeing technology play to really move the workforce, move the people, change, if you will, I'll use the management agenda term, low value to high value work.
We are still very much in a market research phase. So what I'm seeing, right, the trends that I'm seeing are that there really are solutions out there that have been built that offer new processes, changes to the way government could potentially do the work that we do today, that if the government does what we've always done, and we are prescriptively asking for a system that will allow us to do the process the way we've always done it, we will not get the innovation that we know is available in the marketplace today, which is why doing the standards work that my office has been leading with Treasury and OPM and DHS and other parts of GSA is so critical. Because when we talk about the benefits of shared services, the benefits are that you can get standardization, because standardization will drive scale and efficiency. Right? So you have to actually do the standards first. You have to agree on what you want, but we have to agree on what we want in terms of outcomes and not the way we've always done it, which then, to your point, leads to there has to be an appetite at the agency to change the process. And I think that that's hard because some of these processes have become almost policy at some of these agencies. And so there are deep-rooted change efforts that need to happen to allow this technology to bring a new kind of world to the government. But if we don't start now at least opening the door for that opportunity, I think we're just going to be stuck in the rut that we've been in for 20 years.
Can you just give a brief update? Where are you guys at with some of those standards? I know, again, the mid-2000s, both financial and human resources, the lines of business efforts had standards. Mm-hmm. They had frameworks or enterprise architecture, data reference models and such. I imagine it's all being updated or has been updated. Just give a broad view where we're at.
So we have a schedule for completing the standards, and I would say that Treasury Department is leading the way. They have completed the capabilities. They're all following the Federal Integrated Business Framework, which is a consistent way to do standards that we've developed out of USSM. And Treasury Department's issued their capabilities, and they've issued recently the data definitions on GitHub for comment. OPM is doing the same. We've completed all the standards we need for payroll and work schedule leave management, and we're continuing to do the other components of HR so that we can, again, figure out what the strategy is going to be for human capital moving forward.
I know we're all looking forward to that strategy for HR going forward. One of the other things about technology, because you said a lot of this is about changing policies, it's also moving people, if you will, going back to the people discussion, off of this filling out a form or moving from paper to an online form, but you still have to fill it out. How can you automate some of that? How can you use the benefits of robotics and AI and machine learning and all the buzzwords we hear? But I think there's a real value to some of this, if you will, low value work. Has that discussion started to come up? Are you seeing any kind of interest or piloting in the shared services world, or at least in the financial management HR world, where these types of technologies are starting to play a bigger role?
As I said before, I think we're still very much in the market research phase to figure out if those technologies are close enough to what we need, understanding that there will always be federal unique requirements, and we have to make sure that we are measuring that gap very carefully. Because if the gap is too big, then we need to maybe take a step back and really say, does that technology make sense for us? Or do we need to take the time to figure out why the gap exists? Are there just too many federal unique requirements? And can we do anything about those so that we can use this technology? One thing I'm trying to also not do is take a hammer to everything, right? Is like we need to make smart choices for the government. And sometimes that smart choice might be to really look at the policies first and figure out what we can change. And if we can't change it, then we need to also then go back and say, then maybe software as a service doesn't make sense for this thing, because we really just are that different.
My guest is Beth Angerman, Acting Principal Deputy Associate Administrator of the Office of Government-Wide Policy and Director of the Shared Solutions and Performance Improvement Office at the General Services Administration. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Courageous HR on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Successful HR leaders are courageous change agents, inspiring crusaders, and innovation drivers. To meet today's challenges of finding and keeping talent, these leaders need modern technology to help them recruit, train, and develop their workforces. Cornerstone On Demand's cloud-based learning and human capital management software provides government agencies with the tools to easily manage their employee data and processes, allowing the HR heroes in your agency to focus on developing engaged and skilled workers. More at cornerstoneondemand.com/HR superhero.
Welcome back. You're listening to Courageous HR on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Beth Angerman, the Acting Principal Deputy Associate Administrator of the Office of Government-Wide Policy and the Director of the Shared Solutions and Performance Improvement Office at GSA. You brought up the idea of innovation a couple times. Are there innovations that are happening that you could point to? I know I brought up AI and robotics and such, and you said it's still maybe on the early side, but what other innovations would you point to that are happening today that other agencies can look to, can learn from, can adopt in the shared services world as it relates either to the processes, the people, maybe whatever comes to mind?
I think to your point, you see different pockets of agencies trying new things, right? I know the Treasury Department is working on robotics, and you kind of see that a lot. We see new technologies that are new ideas that are coming out of OPM, right, for other types of kind of innovative technology that would be government-wide solutions. But I think that the problem continues to be how much capital does government have access to really drive this innovation, right? I've said it before. It's like what we do with innovation is we find a little bit of money and we want to do something great with it, and you see somebody do a great pilot with it that you can't then fund on a bigger scale, which is why if we can pivot to a better, smarter relationship with industry, that's where the capital is. And we need to better leverage that and just come to expect innovation on some sort of a regular cadence.
And that goes back to this as a service model that you guys in the shared services office have been talking for the last year or so. Are you starting to see some pickup? Is there interest in industry? Is there interest in government to say, yeah, that is maybe the answer to a longstanding challenge that you and I have talked about many times, my favorite topic of the Economy Act and other challenges around access to capital?
Yeah, lots of interest. First of all, there's always the education of what is software as a service. What would life as a service be like for the government? What does it mean that I don't have to own my own system anymore? And does that matter to me? And we are on, there's a spectrum of maturity on that, right? And I think we're all across the spectrum. But I think what we're starting to see is a lot of engagement from industry, and I think we've successfully disrupted the market a little bit because we're saying I want to talk to the companies who are really own the software, who are really going to help us drive standards because it's their business model to have a single instance of this software. That will help the government get to standard. It won't be the magic bullet, but it will help there. And so we're starting to see again more industry engagement, more interest in showing us what they've got, which I think is cool, which is why bringing these market research days to the communities is really helping both sides, I think, really see a change and a shift in what we want. But again, we have to do the right market research because you can't just assume government can use the same technology that industry uses.
Do you have a sense of a timing around when this, if you will, market research phase, this education, this front-end education, the requirement side will, and each agency is different, I get that, but would you expect the first set of agencies to start experimenting, looking at I'll even use the term solicitation RFPs around this as a service model. Is that something that we should see in 18, or is that maybe even something further out to 19?
I think you'll continue to see market research in the short term, and I think every agency is kind of, you know, taking a little bit of a different approach at understanding what's out there. And I think part of that is because they're trying to engage their workforce. I think it's a misnomer to think that they're trying to do something on their own, but I think we should give them credit because of the rest of our conversation, which is this is a strategy to help the agency understand why transformation is not only necessary but possible. And so I think the more of that we see, that it's all kind of leading us in the same direction, and it really shows that the government has kind of a new path forward. I think all of that is progress.
Beth, you brought up the workforce several times. It's where we started the conversation. But the other piece of the workforce I think is important is definitely the industry side. What are you guys doing? How are you reaching out to industry? How are you ensuring that they know their role?
So industry has been involved in this shared service space and with government for years and years, right? They've been providing the solutions behind the scenes and doing so in a really effective way. I think this new world with industry is the idea that we are going to partner for software as a service wherever we possibly can. And we've been seeing so much engagement with industry through our market research, through the industry days that we've held. And my preference is always to let industry talk to us, not to let government talk to industry. Although I know they like to hear about where we're going and what we're doing so that they can be responsive. They have to understand that there is a role that they have to tell us what they've got, what they're investing in, what they're building, what they're seeing as best practices to inform how we're going to go. It's a little chicken or egg, but I think we've successfully engaged them to think about the path forward and to help us inform what's going to come next.
Beth, this has been a fascinating conversation. We're just about out of time. Let me just ask you, with the takeaways from our conversation, there's plenty, but let me focus on the workforce side. What's the message you have to federal employees, to contractors? What should they understand about this idea of COEs, shared services, and the direction that the agencies, that the government is trying to move?
I think my message would be don't be afraid and ask questions. There's an opportunity in this for everyone, but everybody has a little bit of responsibility to find that opportunity. Managers have a responsibility to help employees see the opportunity, and employees have a responsibility to really figure out how to go after that. And I think engaging early and often is key to success.
Very nice. Good advice. Beth Angerman is the Acting Principal Deputy Associate Administrator of Office of Government-Wide Policy and the Director of the Shared Solutions and Performance Improvement Office at the General Services Administration. Beth, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you for listening to Courageous HR, sponsored by Cornerstone On Demand here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Successful HR leaders are courageous change agents, inspiring crusaders, and innovation drivers. To meet today's challenges of finding and keeping talent, these leaders need modern technology to help them recruit, train, and develop their workforces. Cornerstone On Demand's cloud-based learning and human capital management software provides government agencies with the tools to easily manage their employee data and processes, allowing the HR heroes in your agency to focus on developing engaged and skilled workers. More at cornerstoneondemand.com/HR superhero.
The premier global event for the identity and security industries, the No Identity Conference, will be held March 26th through 28th at the Reagan Building in D.C. Join more than 1,000 attendees, 300 organizations, 100 speakers, and representatives from more than 30 countries. Connect with industry leaders to help build out the next generation of government identity and security solutions. Register today at noidentityconference.com. That's noidentityconference.com.